this morning, we're doing a series on how to build a godly man. And the reason why we're focusing just on men is that, as I've mentioned in every class, there is a crisis going on in the modern industrialized world. Every major industrial nation in this world is having a collapse in the performance of men, both in college enrollment, performance in high school, mental health issues, suicides. And I do believe that it is a problem of culture and of things that have changed in this world. I'm not here to change the world or create a political environment, but I am going back to teach what the Bible has always taught about building men. It's not that we're not interested in building godly women. We could do a whole quarter on that. There's just so much material that needs to be covered and emphasized. That's why I have focused on men. Now, 90% of what I will teach you could use with raising a daughter. So if you only have daughters, you'll get a lot out of this material. And we have been focusing in particular, and probably the major point of the whole series, is the father-son relationship. We didn't quite finish that lesson last time. And even though secular liberal writers in some of the books I've read, The Boy Crisis, The War on Boys, and other articles point out that the major factor in the collapse of men is their lack of relationship and connection to their fathers. And so we've really given emphasis to that your boys need to be with dad. They need to spend time with dad. That boys by nature, they're built differently, and that's great. God made men and women differently. Boys are more aggressive. They like to achieve and accomplish. We'll be developing that when we talk about the family in lesson four. But men, in their development, they go through a phase that women do not go through. For a man to be a man, he starts off being very connected to the mother. And then as the child gets older, middle school, and maybe, I don't know the exact times in those who study this, that he needs to start pulling away from the mother and becoming connected and identified with his father. A boy has to learn how to be a man. And his primary source of that is going to be the father. Now, I recognize there are those in single-family households and other circumstances that becomes a challenge, but we need to understand this challenge. It is critical that a man learn how to be a man, and that time with the father is just crucial in this area. When a child does not identify with his father, when a young man feels rejected by the father, there are a lot of issues that come out of that. And oftentimes they don't feel very confident in being a man. If you study male homosexuality, that is the number one cause of male homosexuality is within the home, a rejection from the father, an angry, distant father. And there's many other things. There's a book that I've made reference to that I recommend to you on preventing homosexuality. And that talks about a lot of these things in the development of the son. We're going to finish lesson three, and I'm going to try to go briefly on lesson three because we're going to bring almost all of this up in lesson four. We've talked about things that in lesson three that a son needs. A son needs to learn how to trust God, and we've talked about they need to develop courage to do and what is right. And then the last section on lesson three is the son needs to find fulfillment in work. God's word directs man to work and earn a living. Men are designed by nature to provide and protect. We'll be coming back up in lesson three. Work is honorable. You look through Scripture, in paradise, God had Adam do work. God creates us. He knows us. He provides for us. Well, God did work. His work was the creation. He ended his work. He had a day of rest, but God works, and therefore work is an honorable thing. And when in the garden, we see that the Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to tend and to keep it. We men like to work. We like to accomplish. We like to achieve. We like to take on the battle. That's just by design. It's not evil. It's not toxic. It's not something to be laughed at and put down and made fun of. We see that even after the woman was created, that we find work continued. The work to name the various animals of the field. That was work. But you see, men, we find great joy and accomplishment and achieving goals, setting goals and achieving goals and working. It's just our nature. It's not the number one thing in the world. Pleasing God is the number one thing, but God has created us with needs and tendencies, and fulfilling those things are not bad things. Now, after the curse, we find that work became difficult. We find that in toil you shall eat of it all the days of your life, that work was going to become difficult. In paradise, it wasn't this difficult, but now we find that along with trying to achieve that which we very much need to do, we're going to find there's pain, there's difficulty, there's sin, there's thorns in the field, and there's unpleasant people at work, and there's, you know, sin, and all kinds of other things that affect. And sometimes we may have culture where very poor governments, and there's not maybe jobs that we can have. You know, there's a lot of things that are thrown out there that make this difficult. But man needs to work, and by the very design of God, men are to pursue that with God being first. Do you know how Jesus spent the majority of his life? It wasn't in teaching. Jesus, he began his ministry maybe around 30. But what we find is that before that, he was described this way. Mark 6 and verse 3, is this not the carpenter, the son of Mary and brother of James, Joseph, Judas, and Simon, and are not his sisters here with us, and they were offended at him? Here the local carpenter claimed to be the Son of God. I find that interesting how God worked that and planned that. But notice, if you had met Jesus before his ministry, you'd have found a working man. You'd have found him possibly, if you went to his place of work, maybe standing in a pile of sawdust and sweating and working. And, you know, here, I want you to meet the Son of God. And here you might have somebody come up, and here he is. He's a common laboring man. Work's honorable. Work is important to the man. Understand that. And see, that you know, how did he become a carpenter in that culture? Why was Jesus a carpenter? His father was a carpenter. But you guess what? His father taught him. Do you think his father wanted to be the best carpenter there was? You think his father gave him a lot of advice and things? You see there? I look back at the time. Now, well, that doesn't work in our culture, although, let me put it this way. My major was electrical engineering, and my dad was an engineer. I was a preacher, and my son majored in music. Yvette loved music, but he became a preacher, and Nathan becomes an engineer. You know, it's interesting. It's interesting as you see the interaction with children and parents. There are things that we teach, and you know, you don't have to do the same thing your father does, but you can see how that interaction molds. Absolutely. My dad ended up fighting in World War II. He was in an elite division that did training, and he was a sergeant, but he was a good teacher and leader. He never did his engineering much. He ended up becoming management in a plant, and my dad would hire and fire and do all things, and he would tell me all the time about work. He would give me hints about work and how to be a worker, how to have a work ethic and things to do. I still remember his advice, my dad's advice. I listened to, and I still have that voice in my mind, and I'm very thankful for that. I'm so blessed. And so again, fathers, man, you don't just know, it's not complicated. If you can give time with your children and you can talk with them, they will admire you, they will want to listen to you. And so again, we're going to develop this in the next lesson, but God directs a man toward honest labor, laboring what is good, Ephesians 4:28. And I'm going to move along here because I want to get into another thing of work. You don't just have to go labor in the field. You can invest. You can buy and sell and invest. You can exchange goods. There's various honorable ways. You can start a business, receive a share of a business. And so there's a lot of ways for honorable work. I'm not going to spend much time there. But here is what is crucial. We must teach our children the value of honorable work. Do we have a problem today with a generation that doesn't seem to think they need to pull their fair share? We do. Yeah. And I know there are exceptions to this. But when a young man would rather play video games, now again, I realize at certain ages this changes, so please understand. I understand the pull of, we talked about the video dungeon. We spent a lot of time talking about that. But when a child gets to the age where he ought to be working and he's playing games, that child does not think very highly of themselves. I'm speaking of a man. Something is wrong when a man gets to the age to work and he lets others do things for them. And I hope long before you get to that point, you've taught work ethic. But I'm saying honorable work is very important to have a proper attitude toward it. What should our attitude be toward honorable work? Let's just throw this out here to everybody. What should our attitude be? Men, work. Say that again.
We should be thankful that we're able to physically get up and go to work.
Yeah. Thank you for the ability to do it. Thankful for God providing the opportunity to show wisdom. You know, it's a matter of faithfulness. And I will say this again. If I see in the new generation, and I say because of the lack of connection with parents, they're children that just let somebody do something for them and pay things for them and do things for them, and they expect that. And they're not even thankful for it, and they don't want to pull their fair share. That is a huge problem and generally a failure of the home. I'm sorry, but that's generally a failure of the home. And the verse we looked at earlier, if one will not work, neither shall he eat, that they don't want to be carried by other people. And here's the other verse I want to look at. You see, your relationship to your father and your relationship to God. God says to work. His son came and worked. God worked in creation. In Colossians 3:22, it says, "Bondservants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in sincerity of heart fearing God. And whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men." Now, I'll have to admit, in work, I didn't always have the best attitude. At times at work, there have been times in my work where I didn't have the right attitude, but generally I did. I'll never forget my dad coming out of high school. I went from working at Jack's Hamburgers, and I made $1.25 an hour, and I was paid a little extra. That was high wage. I went from working at Jack's to working at a steel fabrication plant, O'Neill Steel. My dad, because of his place in management, got me that summer job. I was getting paid union wages in the summer. And I can remember, like, whoa, I think I was getting like $3.70 an hour, like triple, more than anything that I was getting to do at Hamburgers. And I want to tell you something. I love that job. And when I first went to work, they didn't have anything for me to do. And they just said, clean up the bays. And so I not only cleaned up the trash in the bays, I swept underneath the metal girders and stuff like that. Did things that nobody ever thought anybody would want to do. Because I loved that job, you know. And anyway, it was later. It was a summer job. I worked a couple of summers. And later, a year later, I was applying for a job somewhere. And I gave them as a reference. And people contacted them, and they called me and says, hey, we might could have an office job for you. Would you be interested in coming here? And so there was a case, and I wasn't that way in every job. Understand, I didn't always have the best attitude toward the flipping of hamburgers and things like that, and I should have. But there's something about honorable work and finding fulfillment in it and doing your best. And that's a challenge. And I want to talk to your wives. We're going to talk about wives in a little bit. You've got to really help your man and their attitude toward work, and your attitude toward their work. I'm jumping ahead to lesson 4 somewhat here. But this is so important that we instill this. Right now, this is what we instill in our children. Let's pull up lesson three up in the up there. Go ahead. I'm lesson four. Go ahead and pull the next lesson up. I want to move on now to lesson four. I wanted to finish three because four is really going to have a lot of parallels to it. And so now we're making a shift, a pretty big shift. We're now moving from the home. We're dealing with the parents in the relationship to the son. We've dealt with the father in particular in relationship to the son. And now we move to the home. And now we're going to move into some things about the differences in men and women. I know we have emphasized, and I have in my preaching over the last 30 years, that men, you need to understand women, because normally that's our problem. But in this lesson, we're solely focusing in on what women can do for men. And so if you want to get a really good book on that, this last section actually, the majority of this outline is a summary of a book called Love and Respect. And I recommend that you look at that. It deals with both sides. But in this lesson, we're specifically going to talk about how wives can build up their husbands. We've been talking about parents, and now we're going to talk about wives. I know wives, your husband needs to help you. So that's a whole other lesson. We'll talk about that in another occasion, but for this study, we're going to talk about the need of men. One of the great mistakes we make, and I'm talking about sincere mistakes, is that we tend to rely on our own wisdom or instincts. And I'm going to tell you, I think my parents trained me in a lot of good things. I think my dad trained me in a lot of good things. There are things I've tried to learn from others, but I want to tell you, there's still a lot I need to learn. And there's a lot you need to learn. The problem sometimes occurs, if I strictly followed what I saw in my home, well, I have done this. You've already heard the funny illustration where, you know what happened on Sundays when you've got the family get together for a meal? It's Sunday, and men like to watch what on TV at this time of the year? We like to watch football. And so what we do, we get the family together, and the wives would cook food, and the men would sit and watch TV, and then when time for the food came, we would all go eat, right? And then when you're done eating, what do the men go back doing? Watch football, and the women clean up and do the dishes. And that was done even when people weren't over, you know? That was done. And so when Yvette and I first got married, we had people over, you know, and it was a great visit, and people went home. I turned on TV. Yvette was taking the dishes back and cleaning the dishes, and next thing you know, I started hearing noise from the kitchen. You know, the dishes being slammed and so on, and just as innocent as I could be, I walked in there. Is there something wrong? And she was looking at me thinking, can't you see all this work I'm doing and you're not lifting a finger to help me? And I really thought this is what men ought to do. And guess what? I learned. Now, this is where my wife helped me. It was done respectfully. It really was. And it's interesting, as you get into marriage, you've got to keep learning. You got to keep learning specifically to your wife and to your husband. And so we're going to talk about husbands in this lesson. The problem that we face a lot of times in the home and in many other areas of life is that we get caught into what I call a pattern of failure. Does anybody want to try to figure out what I mean by a pattern of failure?
All the same old routine.
Oh, yeah. Over and over again, what do you call that? You do the same thing over and over again, hoping that it's going to work. What's the definition of that?
Insanity.
And sometimes, though, in the family, man, we get caught in, we get caught in a familiar pattern, and we're afraid to change. We're afraid to reach out from that, and that is a major problem in homes where we just resign, this is the way it's going to be. And this could be done out of stubbornness, it could be done out of pride, it could be done out of fear. There's a better way. God will help us if we'll seek him. Jeremiah 10:23, O Lord, I know the way of man is not in himself. It is not in man who walks and directs his own steps. O Lord, correct me, but with justice. Not in your anger, lest you bring me to nothing. Godly men and godly women are teachable. And you also start with yourself first. Proverbs 16 and verse 1, the preparations of the heart belong to man, but the answer of the tongue is from the Lord. All the ways of man are pure in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the spirits. Now, women, you're dealing with men, and I want to tell you something. You've got to constantly help yourself to understand how a man thinks. We can be very stubborn. You can, in sincerity, say words wanting to help the man, and we can be insulted. And there is a process here of trying to understand where a man is coming from. And I realize the man may not be meeting your needs, and that's terrible. I always tell when dealing with a mate, okay, look, I need to concentrate on my wife. Am I providing her needs? Am I understanding my wife? Which I think is far more complex. But nonetheless, women need to understand men. And that is not easy either. And I'm coming to realize that more and more. And we've already talked about that some in lesson one and the difference of men and women. In Proverbs 37:23, the steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord, and he delights in his way. Though he fall, he shall not be utterly cast down, for the Lord upholds him with his hand. I have been young, and now I'm old, yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken, nor his descendants begging bread. We're talking about here providing for physical things. I will tell you, in spiritual things, the righteous will not be forsaken if we are teachable. And so again, seek God's help. And this is a matter of trusting God. I want to say something right here. I was even, as I try to help others, I'm becoming more wary of who, sometimes in marriage, there's a place for counselors. There's a place for counseling from Christians. There's a place for counseling from professional counselors. I think that has a value. And sometimes I think as you're dealing with people, there are truly mental and mental health issues that require professionals. Be careful who you choose to seek counsel from. There can be some very sincere people want to help you with your marriage that probably ought not to be giving anybody counsel. In John 14 and verse 27, Jesus says, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you, not as the world gives do I give you. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid." When Jesus talks about peace, I think this is the idea of understanding who you are and where you're going. Understanding life and the underlying principles of life and finding peace. What is Jesus saying about his peace? Is it the peace of the world? It is not. Do worldly people want to help you with your marriage? Absolutely. Are they sincere in it? Absolutely. Are they bringing the peace that Jesus gives? And that is where, I'm just warning here, brethren. Sometimes we do need help. Sometimes you're dealing with situations and I can see it up front. There's a reasoning process here I can't help with. I've seen that. I'm speaking broadly here, not in my specific marriage. But be careful who you bring in as a counselor. And so, we can make mistakes sincerely here. A poor counselor can make things worse. And the best counselor is one who gives God's wisdom and has that application. So again, these are some areas as I work I'm still learning from. And there are people that I trust. I trust Christians. But even with Christians, Christians can give the best advice they have, and that advice could be wrong. So all I'm saying here is just a little warning shot here. Right now, and going back to the earlier lessons, we have a movement. And seriously, it's a political movement. It is a movement that has gained power over major institutions, medical institutions, psychological institutions. That book that I mentioned to you, Preventing Homosexuality, they talk about the political movement and how the American Psychiatrist Association has been taken over by political forces, and they don't even want to research. They forbid research and to the causes of homosexuality and other things. And there's a movement, political, and it's insane, but political doesn't necessarily have to have any connection to sanity. Where there's the unisex movement, and the idea of the differences in men and women are downplayed and even laughed at, and even you have now young men being put on drugs to try to make a young man a woman and vice versa. We have some terrible things going on right now. It destroys people. Now, I'm getting off of that. The rest of this study is going to be on this one point. Women, wives, you want to understand your man better? Learn what this verse means. Ephesians 5:33. Nevertheless, let each one of you in particular so love his own wife as himself. That's the husband's duties. We're not dealing with that here, but the husband needs to major in that one. That's his duty. And this one, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. Easy to understand, right? We've read the verse. We got it, right? I mean, all the man's got to do is say, I love you. If they can mention that word once a day, they got it, right? Here is where the challenge comes. You know, I do believe that husbands and wives generally want the goodwill of the other. But let's say husbands love your wives. What does the husband think when he hears that word love? He's thinking what he would like the wife to do for him, and therefore he gives that to the wife. Does that make sense? When the wife hears respect, the wife has a definition of respect and what she views it as, and therefore she says, well, that's what I'll give to my husband. What's the problem, the potential problem here with that? Does a wife think as the husband does? Does the husband think as the wife does? When you hear a word and your mate hears a word, there may be radically different concepts about what that means. And that's not a bad thing, okay? And we can, what happens when we give our mate what we need? Is there a problem with that? I mean, that's really, that's an honorable emotion. And sometimes it may actually work. It may actually fulfill the need. But what's the problem when we give our mate what we need? That's right. Very simple. And, you know, this is an illustration I've already used. I mean, most of my illustrations I use 100 times. But earlier in the class, we talked about, you know, guys, sometimes how we show one another we like each other. What do we do as guys? We kind of show one another we like each other. What are the ways we do that? If you're a kid, you might hit them on the shoulder. As a guy, when we like one another, what might we do? We talk about one another. We kind of make fun of them. You know, seriously, women, you might go, you know, guys will do that. We'll kind of joke about one another, kid about one another. That's a way of saying, I like you. Well, I try to do that with my wife, you know, and I still struggle with that. Sometimes my natural, what I do as a guy, I do to my wife, and I find out that doesn't work. Wisdom. All right. I am going to give a list of five things. There's actually six in the book, Love and Respect. And I want to now talk to you, wives, women, even parents, frankly, if you're single, thinking about dating, you know, I think it's important to understand men. Wives, but before we get to the list, this is before the list, there's another point I want to make, and you may think this is radical. Challenge me on it. God instructs wives to unconditionally respect their husband. Am I right or wrong in that? Tell you what, let's look at some verses. Let's debate it. Ephesians 5:33. Nevertheless, let each one of you in particular so love his own wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. see any conditions there. Let's look at another verse. This is in the New American Standard Translation here. In the same way, you wives, be submissive to your own husbands, so that even if any of them are disobedient to the word, that they may be won without a word by the behavior of their wives, as they observed your chaste and respectable behavior. Let's debate this. Should a wife unconditionally respect their husband? Now, what we got to do is define terms. We got to talk about this. Anybody want to take a shot at it? Yes.
Within God's parameters, yes. And I think that's the definition that
yes.
If the husband's demanding that she not worship God or that she not be obedient to God,
right.
Then
right.
There's a line that has yeah. to be drawn.
Right. And that is in the area of submission. But even the area of respect, you don't respect evil. You don't respect bad. You don't respect lies. Yes.
Ephesians 5 is also putting the marriage in the context of the relationship between church and Christ.
Yes.
And so I believe Ephesians 5 is more about Christ and the church using the marriage relationship as a comparison. But if we keep it in that context,
yes.
Then these types of definitions and terms make more sense.
Yeah. Should a man unconditionally love his wife? Yeah. Does God unconditionally love us? Now, when I mean respect, let's develop this. Is there ever any man on earth that has ever lived? You could take the most evil people in the world that does not have something about them that deserves respect. Even in the weakest person, there are things that a person can do that is right and that is worthy of respect. So what I'm talking about here, and in the book it says, can you make a list, wives, of things you respect in your husband? Even in the worst of marriages, if you think this through, there are things that your husband does that is honorable and good. And so when we speak of respect, that's what we're speaking of. Noting those things that are good, that are proper, and responding to that with a proper attitude. Unconditional love of God. Is God's love conditioned on what we do? No. It says, but God demonstrates his own love toward us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. I do believe respect comes along these lines. I do not believe there are any circumstances where a wife should have no respect for her mate. And I want to challenge you, wives. I know that men can do terrible things. I'm not justifying a bad marriage. I'm not justifying an ungodly man. Frankly, I'll put the ungodly man front and center first in responsibility and taking charge about his home and what's going on there. He's going to be the first to be up to be correct. Okay? But nonetheless, even with an ungodly man or a man that's not doing what he ought to, are there any circumstances where the wife should have no respect? And I will tell you, I don't know of any. And sometimes what has happened, even good things that the man has done, a woman can become very hurt and bitter, can become even have depression issues and psychological and mental issues and have a difficulty even reasoning. But I believe that every marriage, the woman needs to focus in on respecting her husband and learning how to do that. But again, I want to tell you, we haven't defined this to the depths we need to. What does it mean for a wife to respect her husband? Now, you go to the word here, it's very interesting. This word, root word, means fear. Secondary word means reverence. And so it's the idea of not being frightened and run from, but it's the idea of reverence, to have respect for, fear. Thayer's lexicon, it says to reverence, to venerate, to treat with deference or reverential obedience. It primarily deals with God, but it also deals with men. Let me say this, not just men, but other positions too. Let's talk about this. First off, let me make emphasis here. Respect does not mean you ignore bad things your husband does or that you build them up in that. It's not dishonesty or flattery. Psalms 12 and verse 2, it says, they speak idly of everyone with his neighbor, with flattering lips and a double heart they speak. May the Lord cut off all flattering lips and a tongue that speaks proud things. We're not talking about, hey man, you're doing a great job, when really there's evil things being done. We're not talking about covering up evil, praising evil, encouraging evil. We're not talking about closing eyes here. We're not talking about flattery. So understand that. That's what evil people do. Let's talk about rulers. Let's give a parallel. Are we to respect our rulers? Are we to, parents, dads, do you teach your children to respect policemen?
Yes, sir.
Absolutely. Are all policemen honorable? Nope. Now, I had a lot of policemen in my home, and I try to talk to policemen. Again, this is my personal choice. I'll try to talk to policemen every time I see them in a restaurant. I thank them for their serving our community. I think they're in a very difficult job. And I try to do that. I remember one young girl once. She was raised by a very godly mother. They did a lot of racing and running, and she was a teenager. And running a race, there were policemen directing traffic. I'm sitting there, you know, just trying to breathe, and she would thank every policeman she passed, you know. And I was very impressed with that. And there's teaching respect and honor. Does our president deserve respect? Does the past president deserve respect? Does the president before that deserve respect? Of course. You following me here? This idea of respect is not overlooking faults. It's not overlooking evil. But this is critical to the function of the family. It's critical to the function of the nation. We must show respect for those in authority that God has placed in authority, regardless if they personally deserve it or not. You following me? I think this may make this a little more understandable. In Acts 23, Stacy, we dealt with this the other night, and Wednesday night, where Paul had rebuked the high priest in a very strong way. In verse 3, it says, God will strike you, you whitewashed wall, for you sit to judge me according to the law, and do you command me to be struck contrary to the law? And he's right. Now, what he's saying here is all accurate. But notice, verse 4, and those who stood by said, did you revile God's high priest? Then Paul says, I did not know, brethren, that he was the high priest, for it is written, you shall not speak evil of a ruler of your people. Interesting, isn't it? This man wasn't honorable. He had participated in the murder of Jesus. He was about to participate in the railroad of Paul and was going to get involved with a conspiracy to have him murdered, the high priest of God's people. There are things that he was doing that deserved no respect, but he was in a position that deserved respect regardless if the man was honorable or not. The danger that you fall into, wives, when you show open disrespect to your husband is several things. First off, that's the great way to push him off. But let's say you have children, and your children see open disrespect to the father. Oh, we were already done? Okay, I'm sorry. All right, 2 bells ring. I didn't realize that. Okay, we'll pick this up next week. Hope you have outlines. For those who are visiting, we'll be posting these at AU Beacon very soon. You can listen to the outlines.